Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week, Beyoncé, the superstar singer, entered the world of celebrity booze owners. She unveiled her latest business endeavor this week, a luxury whiskey inspired, we're told, by her prohibition-busting great-grandfather. Promising an unexpected take, quotes, on American whiskey, the drink is named Sir Davis in honor of the singer's paternal great-grandfather. He was a Prohibition-era moonshiner. Quote, when I discovered that my great-grandfather had been a moonshine man, it felt like my love for whiskey was fated, unquote, Beyoncé. The website for the whiskey features a handwritten letter from Beyoncé to her great-grandfather, saying his, quote, legacy is a force that drives me, unquote. Beyoncé was involved in designing the bottle, which features a bronze horse logo representing the Houston-born star's Texas roots, according to CNN. It was described as years in the making, although she's come out with a couple of country-flavored albums in recent years. And it's the latest development in a story that really first caught my attention a few years ago when Madonna signed a deal to endorse either a whiskey or a vodka. And one of the Hollywood trade papers announced the deal as Madonna joining the ranks of celebrity booze endorsers. Hence what follows. Hello, welcome to the show.
You've been selling some kind of glamour since 1986. Roughed up clothes, a coked up nose, all were in the mix. But now that you've got children, that don't seem so cool. Then you've got to pull some Jacksons to pay for private school. In the days gone by, you would have got coarser and coarser. So your demographics all grown up, they like the finer things, but a Mercedes deal's not in the cards, your DUI still clings. You're too cool to push cell phones, your designs are gone from Saks, but you can't live on ringtones and promoting foreign snacks. There's no need to shout, you're tired of waiting. The white goods look so clean. The whole affair's been walked upstairs. It's a brand new day, a bold new fashion scene. Oh, your face is back on billboards on the other side of town. Your brand is aspirational. You're an up without a down. Folks with a drinking problem can read the teeny print, but you're late for a photo shoot. Dirty Booze Endorser. Celebrity Booze Endorser.
From Santa Monica, California, home of the homeless, home of, according to a local paper this week, at least a letter to the local paper, a lot of empty storefronts. Well, that's a place for homeless people to sleep, I guess. I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. First of all, news about forever chemicals. These are known as PFAS, perfluorinated chemicals. We came up with them, we humans, and they don't go away. They stay in the environment like forever. They've now been detected at water filtration plants across Sydney, Australia. Sydney has been monitoring water outlets since June and detected levels considered unsafe in the United States, although they're still considered safe in Australia. But they're reviewing the situation to see if maybe their standards are, you know, outdated. Meanwhile, an Australia first study has found PFOS, forever chemicals, in platypuses. Yes, that's the plural of platypus. It wouldn't be platypi, would it? No. This has sparked warnings that people in at least New South Wales, where Sydney is located, that's the state, may be more exposed than once thought. Scientists from Western Sydney University have discovered those chemicals in the livers of 8 deceased platypuses collected from numerous eastern New South Wales rivers. They were mostly collected from areas that are not known as PFOS hotspots, fueling concerns that chemicals are far more prevalent in Australia's environment than was previously understood. Well, the platypuses knew it. The findings, according to a lead researcher, shocked her, considering the animals came from areas ranging from remote to urban, meaning there is pollution in all of those environments. Considering PFOS shouldn't be there in the first place, it's a lot, she said. What's telling us, she continues, is PFOS contamination is much more widespread than what we know. Unquote. It's the first study of its kind, according to the Australian ABC, on platypuses. Sheds light on yet another threat to a species already vulnerable to impacts associated with human activity. Do they thank us? I don't know. Haven't heard. Numerous studies have found PFOS, these forever chemicals, sometimes called PFAS, just to confuse us more. They're toxic to humans and can have harmful health effects. Your liver and thyroid diseases, some are linked to cancers. They're still found in everyday products, your nonstick pans, your makeup. As far as I know, platypuses don't wear makeup. But that's the latest on forever chemicals now.
Looks like must close.
It's the negative kind of love. According to the Wall Street Journal, Elon Musk is the worst deal maker in U.S. markets since the global financial crisis. The newspaper, owned by Rupert Murdoch, still, is slamming Musk's $44 billion takeover of Twitter, now rebranded like everything around Musk as X, like one of his sons. Since late 2022, the social media platform's value has nosedived, or nosedove, making the $13 billion in debt that banks took on to finance the deal virtually unsaleable. These loans, according to the Journal, have been stuck on the balance sheets of 7 original banks, despite their desperate efforts to offload them at steep discounts. The losses don't end there. Some banks have written down the value of the loans The paper reported Twitter loans have been hung longer than every similar unsold deal since the financial crisis. Lenders have pocketed interest payments, but the value of the loans has been slashed by hundreds of millions of dollars. Meanwhile, Tesla shares, which once were valued at a peak of $407 a share a couple years ago, have almost halved, closing at $221 a share. This week, this cuts the company's market value from roughly $1.2 to $692 billion. It's still a lot of money. Come on. The bankers who negotiated these loans are feeling the pain. Some merger and acquisition bankers got a 40% pay cut last year, mainly due to the loans stuck on their balance sheets, the biggest of which was Musk's Twitter takeover. The journal estimates the lenders will lose $2 billion on the deals. Bloomberg adds X is struggling financially, despite Musk's controversial restructuring, mainly firing 70% of the staff or so, and cost-cutting efforts. Ditto. Company's revenue plunged 40% in the first half of last year, according to the latest figures. So, yeah. Yeah, he's a genius of a particular kind. He's a smart guy in a smart world.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Something smart is going away. Perhaps something smart is reinforcing its presence in your living room. Meta, formerly Facebook, has canceled work on a high-end mixed reality headset. It was developing the product to compete with the Apple Vision Pro. According to The Information, Meta this week told employees to quit working on the device following a product review that involved Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg. The other Zuck. The now-canceled device was slated for launch a couple years from now. 3 years from now. It was meant to be equipped with high-resolution micro-OLED displays. That's what Apple used for the Vision Pro. Meta was aiming to sell the device for under a grand. That was not going to be possible with the high cost of the displays. Meta's also focusing now on software rather than hardware. It announced a platform for third-party hardware makers a little while ago. Let them lose the money, you know? When the Vision Pro launched, Meta was hoping the device would reinvigorate the headset market. Yeah. How many people have you seen walking around with those on? Because they look so... And that would validate Zuckerberg's major push into the AR and VR space, you know, R for reality, those other letters for something less real. Instead, Apple has struggled with consumer appeal. Interest in the Vision Pro has waned over time, according to Mac Rumors. Enthusiasm about it started dying down just about a month after it launched. Fewer customers visited Apple retail stores for demonstration. Apple cut Vision Pro shipments a couple months ago. The company is unlikely to sell even 500,000 of the headsets this year. As a result, Apple has stopped work on a second-generation, higher-cost Vision Pro. Don't you want to pay more to wear that thing on your head? It's instead focusing on creating a lower-cost model with fewer features and a price closer to the high-end iPhones. Maybe you'd like to wear that on your head for less money. Meanwhile, what's happening on your TV? Ars Technica, a website devoted to technical side of the arts, I guess, says the TV business isn't just about selling TVs anymore. Companies are increasingly seeing viewers, not TV sets, as their most lucrative asset. Over the past few years, TV makers have seen rising financial success from TV operating systems that can show viewers' ads and analyze their responses. Brands like LG, Samsung, Roku, and Vizio are increasingly, if not primarily, seeking recurring revenue from already sold TV sets via ad sales and tracking. With smart TVs becoming mainstream and hardware margins falling, manufacturers have sought new ways to make money. TV operating system providers, OS providers, can access a more frequent revenue source at higher margins, which has led to a viewing experience loaded with ads. They can be viewed from the moment you pick up your remote, which may feature streaming service ads in the form of physical buttons. Some TV brands already prioritize data collection and the ability to sell ads. Most are trying to boost their appeal to advertisers. Smart TV operating systems have become the cash cow of the TV business. Now, automatic content recognition, ACR, it's a tech that's at the heart of the smart TV ads business. Most TV brands say users can opt out of ACR, but Vizio has already reportedly taken advantage of the feature without user permission. ACR is also sometimes turned on by default. The off switch is often buried in a menu somewhere. Most users, that is to say, us, have almost nothing to gain from automatic content recognition and face privacy concerns by sharing information, sometimes in real time, about what they do with their TVs. I'll tell you what I do with mine. At this point, consumers have come to expect ads and tracking on budget TVs from your Vizio or your Roku. But the biggest companies in TV are working on turning their sets into data-prolific billboards, too. Companies like LG and Samsung. LG started sharing data gathered from its TVs with Nielsen, giving the data and market measurement firm, quote, the largest ACR data footprint in the industry, unquote. And they don't do it with their feet. The deal gives Nielsen streaming and linear TV data from LG's TVs and provides firms buying ads on those TVs with always-on streaming measurement and big data from LG Ad Solutions. LG recently unveiled a goal of evolving its hardware business into a media and entertainment platform company, meaning pushing ads. Representatives for LG and Samsung declined to comment to the publication Ars Technica about how much of their respective companies' business is ad sales. In recent months, one could have seen budget brands of televisions test users' limits when it comes to ads. This is all happening amid a global shift to streaming services that are increasingly ad-driven. Roku is constantly trying to fit more ads with stronger targeting into its interface, whether via the menu, screensavers, or delivered via Roku TV channels. Earlier this year, Roku introduced home screen video ads. That's like the screen you get before you watch anything. Roku has also tested a feature that would force viewers to sit through effectively a mid-roll ad when clicking from the screensaver to return to the home screen. Roku filed a patent for showing ads over anything you plug into your TV. Maybe that won't happen. It's just a patent. Amazon reportedly started deploying its own operating system to run its TVs late last year. Amazon Fire TV users are subject to full-screen video ads, and ownership of the operating system gives Amazon more control and greater potential for earnings from advertising services. Amazon's ad business was thought to be its most profitable in 2020. Software updates easily force new ad capabilities into already owned TVs. It's likely this strategy will intensify in the near term as operating system providers try to find more ways to support new types of ads. The report from Ars Technica concludes, as we've seen before with TV commercials, which have gotten more frequent over time, once the ad genie is out of the bottle, it tends to grow, not go back inside. And just an observation from the host of this program, the standard length of a commercial, TV or radio, used to be 60 seconds. Then it became 30 seconds. Now you can see in an ad pod on at least CNN and MSNBC ads that are as short as 5 seconds, which means they really have to scream at you. Ladies and gentlemen, this week, former President Trump addressed a rally, I think in Florida, and pretended to take a survey of his audience, asking them whether he should desist from personal attacks on his opponent or opponents, or have more of them. And he said, you know, they're going after me. I should be able to address personal attacks against them. That's what he concluded from his poll. We didn't see the actual numbers, but we've seen the results.
Direct from Bedminster, the most beautiful golf course in the entire East Coast, where I've won 3 consecutive club championships against the most pathetic cheaters, I'm your favorite ex-president with more Truth Social audio. Brought to you by Trump Silverware, the home of the two-tined fork. So, Kambula officially is the nomination of the so-called Democrat Party. No surprise, because she stole it from Joe Biden a month ago. And at her big convention, which had a crowd smaller than a Lions Club picnic, when she wasn't insisting she was East Asian, she went back to playing the role of black. Why do I say that? Well, for starters, and for finishers, look at her hair. Straight and brown? Give me a break. I've had more than my share of black women friends, like, for instance, Mrs. Don King, wife of the famous fight promoter. She had real black woman's hair, black and curly as hell. She called it kinky. You could rest an ashtray on top of it. So Kambula isn't fooling anyone with the first grain of sense, especially me. I know a little bit something about hair. You wouldn't believe the number of people who come up to me all the time at Mar-a-Lago, here at Bedminster, or at any of my crowd-packed rallies. People who say, "Sir, you have the most perfect head of hair I've ever seen. As a man, I'm not supposed to focus on such things." And I don't. But when I do, I can't help agreeing with them. Name me one president this country has ever had who had better hair. So when I say Kambula isn't fooling anyone with her black like me act, you can take it to the bank. I'd suggest Deutsche Bank. And if you order Trump silverware before the end of the month, you'll get a free spoon with every collection. That's it for now, but you know there'll be more before you know it.
Trump Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Watches, where the time is always right, at least twice a day.
Tira-ya-da-dum-da, tira-ya-da-dum-da, tira-ya-da-dum-da-ra-ra, tira-ya-da-dum-da.
From Santa Monica, this right here, this is Le Show. And now, news of the godly. First of all, we go back down to Brazil, where a lot of news of the godly is coming these days. Dateline Sao Paulo, a priest was arrested this past week in the city of Coari, on Brazil's Amazonas state, after a police inquiry concluded that he abused at least four teenagers. One of them ended up pregnant and was forced by him to have an abortion. Ironic, isn't it? 31-year-old Father Paulo Aruja da Silva was initially reported by an anonymous person. Last year, the police launched an investigation and talked to one of his victims. The 17-year-old teenager told the authorities that she and De Silva began a relationship when she was only 14. She said he used to make and store videos of their sexual activities. The police deputy involved told the press the victim was facing enormous pressure from De Silva when she looked for police help last year. Quote, she was undergoing strong psychological violence because the priest not only co-opted the victims in his parish, but also forced them to remain in a relationship with him. That's what the police deputy said. He continued, De Silva would never allow the victims to stop seeing him, and then even said things like, quote, if you're not with me, you won't be with anybody else. Unquote. All of the victims, at least the identified victims, were churchgoers, members of the Diocese of Coari's St. Peter Parish, headed by De Silva. According to the police, witnesses told them that the priest would always ask the victims to bring other girls so they could have group sex. And he always made sure to tape everything. When the agents broke into the parish to detain De Silva, he was on his bed with a young lady who had just turned 18, which means that the priest had already had sex with her when she was a minor. said the police deputy. Police took control of Da Silva's smartphone, found at least 260 videos made by the priest showing sex acts with minors. You want proof? I made proof. The priest also had about $5,500 with him in his bedroom. You never know when you're going to need money in your bedroom. After the priest's imprisonment earlier this month, the diocese released a statement in which it stated its, quote, repudiation to all forms of abuse and exploitation. The Diocese of Kauai expresses its solidarity to the victims and their families and is immediately available to accompany and help the victims overcome the traumas provoked by Father Da Silva's abuses. The diocese said, quote, all the necessary canonical measures have been taken. The priest was suspended and can no longer have any activity in the parish. The church is also available to work with the authorities in the inquiry. That's what the note concluded. The priest will be indicted for crimes like raping minors of vulnerable people, omitting assistance to children and teenagers, producing and storing pornographic contents involving minors, forcing an abortion, and menacing a woman with violence. The police said the investigation will continue. You never know who else will be involved. And after decades of controversies and dozens of survivors speaking out, the Church of England still faces fierce criticism for the way it responds when members of the clergy are accused of abuse. A BBC investigation into how it dealt with allegations about a priest, Andrew Hindley, exposed deep and continuing failings in the church's child protection system. After the news about that canon, Andrew Hindley, broke earlier this week, the current dean of Blackburn, the very Reverend Peter Howell Jones, acknowledged there had been, quote, a meteoric failure of structure and systems which should have been addressed years before, unquote. Asked if, given the details now known, he trusts the church to which he belongs, the dean said, quote, I categorically do not, unquote. Canon Hindley was offered a secret six-figure payoff after being viewed as a potential risk to children and young people. The priest, who denies any criminal activity or wrongdoing, was subject to five police investigations, including investigations of sexual assault. He has never been charged with any crime. Unable to rely on criminal prosecutions, the church commissioned risk assessments by child protection experts. Several concluded that Canon Hindley did pose a potential risk to children and young people, but he remained in his post. Church leaders say they were bound by their procedures. That must be uncomfortable. And when those failed, they had only one option, a financial settlement. So the church told the BBC this was to end a legal claim made by the priest after he was forced to retire early. Where did the church's procedures fail? After so many scandals, reviews, and inquiries over the years, the question for many is why things have not been put right before now. Some within the church itself have expressed exasperation. Quote, if the church of which I am part had begun to address some of its structures 10 or 15 years before, these things may never have happened, and I'm deeply sorry for that, said the very Reverend Peter Howell Jones. Maybe he should be the very, very Reverend. Longtime observers of Church of England practices are starting to put the continued failings, down to more than just a lack of understanding of what needs to be done. Quote, I have serious concerns about the attitudes and the willingness of the church to get its house in order. I'm not sure that willingness is there at this time, and I don't believe the church has a comprehensive commitment to learn from experience, unquote, child protection expert Dr. Ian Elliott. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen, while we're sorry about something, here are the apologies of the week.
we're so sorry.
On Wednesday evening, video of Gus Walls, son of Governor Tim Walls of Minnesota, went viral as he fought back tears during his father's speech at the DNC. A Milwaukee talk radio host, Jay Weber, criticized the teenager, leading to pushback from listeners and an apology from the radio host. The 17-year-old suffers from a nonverbal learning disorder, anxiety disorder, and ADHD. The teenager cried as his father took the stage and in a viral moment shouted, "That's my dad!" when his father mentioned how much he loved his family. According to social media, in a post which has since been deleted, the radio host, Jay Weber, called the Walls son, quote, "a blubbering bitch boy." He gets credit for alliteration. "Sorry, but this is embarrassing for both father and son," Weber said. "If the Waltzes represent today's American man, this country is screwed. Meet my son, Gus. He's a blubbering bitch boy. His mother and I are very proud," unquote, Weber. When listeners began to criticize his statement, he recanted it. Quote, "I didn't realize the kid was disabled and have taken the post down." When another user said it was generally a good idea to leave candidates' family members alone, Weber concurred. "I agree," quoting Weber. "In an X fever, I broke one of my own longstanding rules when I saw the video. I've said kids are off limits for decades, then fell into it myself. No excuses, good reminder," unquote. The radio host, who I believe has now been suspended, so he's an off-radio host. Former wrestling star Ronda Rousey is apologizing for sharing a conspiracy video about the Sandy Hook tragedy. It's like Alex Jones is still alive. Quote, "I can't say how many times I've redrafted this apology over the last 11 years, how many times I've convinced myself it wasn't the right time or that I'd be causing even more damage by giving it," Rousey wrote in a statement shared on X early Friday. "But 11 years ago," she continued, "I made the single most regrettable decision of my life." Worse, I guess, than becoming a female wrestler. "I watched a Sandy Hook conspiracy video and reposted it on Twitter," she continued. "I didn't even believe it, but I was so horrified that the truth that I was grasping for an alternative fiction to cling to. Instead, I quickly realized my mistake and took it down, but the damage was done," Rousey added, noting her January 2013 social media post, the one she's referring to, quote, "slipped under the media's radar." She said she tried to issue an apology in a recently published memoir, but was discouraged by her publisher. "So," quoting her again, "I convinced myself that apologizing would just reopen the wound for no other reason than me selfishly trying to make myself feel better. But honestly, I deserve to be hated, labeled, detested, resented, and the worse for it." She continued, "I deserve to lose out on every opportunity. I should have been canceled. I would have deserved it. I still do. I apologize that this came 11 years too late. But to those affected by the Sandy Hook massacre, from the bottom of my heart and the depth of my soul, I am so sorry for the hurt I caused. I can't even begin to imagine the pain you've endured," she said to the parents. "And words cannot describe how thoroughly remorseful and ashamed I am of myself for contributing to it. I've regretted it every day of my life since, and will continue to do so until the day I die," unquote. She must be the sorriest woman wrestler. Tom Kim concedes it wasn't his finest moment. The 22-year-old South Korean and three-time winner on the PGA Tour missed a 5-foot birdie putt, sorry about that, at the 12th hole on the final round of the FedEx Championship in Memphis. What he did next, slamming the ground in frustration with his putter and leaving a sizable dent in the putting surface, is an unforgivable offense in the world of golf, according to Golf Week, which should know. It was childish behavior, they say, from a player who knows better and disrespectful to the continuing competitors, who still had to play the hole and putt through the ugly mark he made. He reportedly didn't bother to repair the damage to the green, leaving his caddy to clean up after him. His antics were captured on video. The backlash came fast and furious on social media. "Hi, everyone," said Kim in an apology issued Monday night on Instagram. "It's been brought to my attention about my frustration shown yesterday on the 12th green," he wrote. "I will never lie to my peers and fans because I have too much respect and gratitude towards them. I wasn't aware that I had made that big of a damage on the green, because if I did, I would have just never left without repairing it. But I was clearly wrong. We'll take full responsibility of my actions and we'll be better going forward. Thank you. And I apologize again, and thank you for your support throughout a tough year," unquote. I guess there were some tournaments he didn't win. A puzzling billboard went up at Live Casino in South Philadelphia that welcomed Bruce Springsteen to Philadelphia. That's a report from the Philadelphia Inquirer. A journalist, Stan Goldstein, published a photo of the typo on X. It's been viewed almost 200,000 times. The message was also spotted by John Worster, the drummer for a bunch of bands you've never heard of, who posted the typo to Instagram. "Tired of people saying Philly doesn't put in the work," Worster captioned the photo, which went Philly viral. The electronic billboard has since been replaced with an apology. Live Casino wrote, "Never gamble on spell check. Sorry, boss." The billboards were meant to promote Springsteen's and his band's two-night stint at a local park, said the statement from the casino owner. "Today, we have to have fun at our own expense. Sorry, boss." Unquote. The casino is offering Springsteen free dinner after Friday's show. And you know how good casino dinners are. Veteran PBS correspondent Judy Woodruff apologized this week for comments she made on the air regarding former President Trump and negotiations for a ceasefire in Gaza between Israel and Hamas. During the Democratic National Convention coverage this week, Woodruff repeated a story she had read in Axios and Reuters that Trump had allegedly been encouraging Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to put off peace talks until after the U.S. election, in the belief that a successful deal could help his opponent, Kamala Harris, in her campaign. Woodruff said in a post on X later, she had not seen later reporting that this story had been denied by the Trump campaign and by Israel. She said her remarks had not been based on any original reporting on her part. Quote, "This was a mistake, and I apologize for it," unquote. Judy Woodruff. The movie studio Lionsgate, it's a mini major, it's recalling its latest trailer for Francis Ford Coppola's epic Megalopolis. The trailer featured a litany of quotes from famous film critics that they had never written. Quote, "Lionsgate is immediately recalling our trailer for Megalopolis. We offer our sincere apologies to the critics involved and to Francis Ford Coppola and American Zoetrope for this inexcusable error in our vetting process. We screwed up. We are sorry," unquote. The studio. Yeah, the studio writes those. The trailer, released midweek, was aimed to position Coppola's latest film as a work of art that would withstand the test of time, much like his previous masterpieces, The Godfather and Apocalypse Now. This, according to Variety. The video included several quotes from critics panning Coppola's previous work, but none of the phrases attributed to the likes of Roger Ebert and Pauline Kael could be found in any of their reviews. According to Variety's own critic, Owen Gleiberman, quote, "Even if you're one of those people who doesn't like critics, we hardly deserve to have words put in our mouths. The trivial scandal of all this is that the whole trailer is built on a false narrative," Gleiberman said. "Critics loved The Godfather, and although Apocalypse Now is divisive, it received a lot of crucial critical support." Unquote. It's not clear where most of the quotes featured in the trailer came from. With the exception of Roger Ebert's comment, "A Triumph of Style Over Substance," which was actually pulled from his review of Batman and not about Dracula. The trailer snafu is the latest in a string of scandals befalling the $120 million production. Coppola financed it entirely himself. Last month, Variety exclusively obtained video depicting Coppola trying to kiss young female extras on the set of the project, as additional crew members detailed his unprofessional behavior during production. Former Republican Representative George Santos, speaking of failures, pleaded guilty this week to aggravated identity theft and wire fraud. Those charges came out of fraudulent activity during his midterm campaign a couple years ago. The guilty plea came just weeks before the ex-congressman was set to stand trial on nearly two dozen federal charges, including allegations of fraud related to COVID-19 unemployment benefits, misusing campaign funds, and lying about his personal finances on House disclosure reports. He had to admit to all of those in a statement. He will serve a minimum of 2 years in prison as part of the agreement and pay $373,000. Quote, "I deeply regret my conduct. I accept full responsibility for my actions. I allowed ambition to cloud my judgment. Pleading guilty is a step I never imagined I'd take, but it's the right thing to do. It is my own recognition of the lies I told myself." Unquote. George Santos. Prosecutors had over 500 exhibits of evidence ready, including cell phone evidence, information downloaded from his iCloud account, and financial records. He had previously pleaded not guilty to the 23 counts, which included allegations that he stole donors' identities and ran up thousands of dollars in fraudulent charges on their credit cards. He insisted after the second wave of charges were filed, those were 10, that he would not accept a plea deal and he would seek re-election for his seat. He told reporters last October, "The number one question you all ask me is, are you going to take a plea deal? No, the answer is, I will not take a plea deal," unquote. This year, he took a plea deal. And speaking of politics, finally, a couple of apologies relating to Kamala Harris. The comedian D.L. Hughley has ended up supporting her. He not only took jabs at former President Trump, but he apologized to Harris for statements he made in the past. You may have seen this. It was on TV, I think Wednesday night. The 61-year-old comedian, actor, personality, podcaster, previously misinterpreted Harris's history as a prosecutor, and he had shared disparaging remarks about her on his radio show. He's on the radio. He has previously used the platform to apologize to Harris and commit himself to supporting her quest for the White House. And then he did so again at the DNC on Wednesday. "I made assumptions about Kamala's record, and I often repeated them to a lot of people. Then one day, Kamala invited me to her house. She put her hand on my shoulder, and she asked me to do some research, something I had never done, something a lot of people I know had never done before. Imagine attacking someone's character without a single Google search," unquote, Dale Hughley. Getting in a plug for Google while he was at it. And this from Pennsylvania. A Souderton area Pennsylvania school district board member apologized late this week for a social media post he made during the start of the month. In a letter posted to a website in the local area, William Formica, spelled like Formica, but probably pronounced Formica, apologized to his fellow school board members and the community overall for unnecessary challenges that a post on X directed at Kamala Harris. Quote, I recognize this behavior did not reflect the professionalism expected of me. For that, I sincerely apologize to my supporters, those who voted for me, and everyone who entrusted me with this position. Unquote. The post that riled local parents and taxpayers was his response to another ex-user asking for one example of Harris's political accomplishments. The answer Formica offered was simply that, quote, she be dot 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 a lot of dudes, unquote. Calls for him to resign over the sexist comments quickly grew as stories about the post spread online, even getting coverage from London's Daily Mail. Well, I like that kind of stuff. Friday's letter is the first time the elected board member has addressed the response to his post. The superintendent of schools issued a letter earlier this month that said the board was taking time to, quote, process the situation surrounding the inappropriate language and poor judgment by a member of the school board, unquote. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. I guess the school superintendent regarded the statement as a low blow. Now, just a little bit of news of the warm. Major water reservoirs across the continental United States are experiencing longer, more severe, and more variable periods of low storage than decades ago, according to a new study. The problems are most severe in the western and central United States. Reservoirs in the eastern and southeastern U.S. are not immune. Overall, reservoirs are less reliable and more vulnerable to climate change than they used to be, according to the American Geophysical Union. The findings, which update critical information about water storage, should improve water forecasting. Water storage reservoirs are becoming increasingly important as more ephemeral natural storage grows less reliable. In many regions, snowpack is diminishing, rivers are running low, and humans, you know about them, are pumping away groundwater reserves. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, it's copyrighted. Why not? Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same station on radio and on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. Love to have you back along for the radio ride. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts and a playlist of the music heard here on, and a lot of other stuff. We just jammed it full of stuff. All at harryshearer.com. And yes, I'm on X at the Harry Shearer. Show comes to you from Sanctuary Progress and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long from the home of the homeless.